Okay, we're back and on defence policy now, and Richard Marles has announced many, many billions, $53 billion, I think, is that over 5 years or something? But I think broken down, it's about 2.4% of GDP. I don't like these constant references, but that's not as much as what Trump wants. Well, who gives a damn? I mean, what's the relevance of that? But it's it was kind of clouded in a way because he might have used a NATO kind of comparison rather than the Australian straight GDP comparison. Either way, it's an increase. Do you think that's a popular move given the pressures on the budget at the moment?
Well, yes. I mean, yes and no. Certainly the global instability we're seeing everywhere at the moment, particularly in the Middle East, and, you know, people's perceptions about the American alliance and is it as reliable as it has been in the past, has made voters very anxious about global insecurity and regional insecurity. And arguments around self-sufficiency, whether it be through energy, oil refinery and so forth, are becoming more pronounced. And obviously that's a theme for One Nation, but also Andrew Hastie has been banging on about this for 6-7 years. But what we're also seeing is, you know, this self-sufficiency angle also goes to defence as well, and that sort of sense of you know, exposure. If China were to invade Taiwan, which is not implausible, and we get a lot of our refined oil from Singapore, well, good luck getting any boats through that shipping area.
That brings us then to what Richard Marles did say about this is the most threatening strategic situation since World War II. I have trouble dealing with that. But okay, we have the Middle East conflict. We have Russia versus Ukraine. But he was talking about Australia-specific situation and the strategic risks here. It's almost as if, despite everything that's going on in the Middle East and in Europe and Russia and Ukraine, it's still the China threat that dominates their thinking. And I just feel that we live in one of the most peaceful parts of the world. I don't, to the same extent as they do, feel this threat, this constant threat of invasion. You might remember the Nine newspapers ran 2 or 3 years ago now that the line that the invasion was imminent and might happen within 2 years. Well, that 2 years is long gone,
yeah.
And nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. The relationship remains as it was. I just don't understand why they need to talk it up in the way that they do.
Mm.
Why are they justifying this defence expenditure? And especially at a time when we're about to get a budget that's going to be as tight as they get, and there'll be all sorts of community groups that are going to be denied money that they might have expected. There'll be people who are saying, well, what's in it for me because I've got this kind of cost of living pressure. It does seem to be contradictory.
Yeah, it's got to be one of the toughest budgets ever delivered. Jim Chalmers is obviously a very good political performer and he's a good communicator, but putting this budget together is going to be the toughest challenge of his career by far. And bear in mind that he was Swan's chief of staff during the GFC, so he's no stranger to these challenging times. But I fear what we're about to enter is going to be far worse than the GFC. There's a lot of credible talk about stagflation, including former chair of the RBA or Treasury. And stagflation, of course, is high inflation, low growth, high unemployment. And if that happens, I think we're going to see a level of anxiety we haven't seen before, and it's already at very high levels, and despondency about the future. Bear in mind that unless you're over the age of 55, and I'm 56, most Australians don't have any recollection at all of living in a recession.
Hmm.
I've got a vague memory of it. I was at uni. You know, I do recall my parents doing it tough, but being incredibly ungrateful. But, you know, having that sort of pressure, I do remember the youth unemployment levels being at 30% and being anxious about that. So it's really the great majority of Australians have no idea what living in a recession is like, and how they respond to that is going to be very, very challenging for the government. I think Albanese is acutely aware of that, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's so proactive on the fuel. He's travelling overseas all the time, and there's been ridiculous criticism from the opposition on that. He wants to be seen to be on top of it, and I think part of it is because, you know, he needs to for the functioning of the country. But he doesn't want to be like Greg Hunt and Scott Morrison with the vaccines. You know, where Scott Morrison said it's not a race. mate, of course it's a race, you know, and I think it's also insulating himself for what's about to come so that he does look proactive and he does look like he's on top of these issues.
I did live through a recession, but I lived through a time when they described it then as the misery index.
Mm.
And that's when inflation, unemployment and interest rates were all above 10%.
Yeah.
Simultaneously.
Yeah.
And that's why they described it in the way that they did. But just on that, like Jim Chalmers has said that, and he now is, I think, trying to soften up the electorate for what might be coming, because he does talk now in quite descriptive language about what might be around the corner. But he's saying that it's going to be a tough budget, but it will still be ambitious. So I guess he's not saying we're going to throw everything out. You know, this is not a time for reform. He's saying that he can do both at the same time. Do you think he can?
No.
Because it depends a bit, though, on what you regard as reform and what kind of reform you're talking about. Like, if it's money raising, if it's revenue raising in some way, for example, on exports of gas and so on, then that can be that can certainly fit that category.
Yeah. What's been interesting to me recently is watching all of Labor's proxies come out and starting to attack the RBA, putting up interest rates. Which is, you know, Chalmers is obviously being very careful and measured, but the deputy governor was in Washington, D.C. this week with the treasurer, and he was certainly sounding the alarm bells on that. The next RBA meeting is in the first week of May, and then there's another one mid-June. And the market expects, I think there's a 66% expectation of an interest rate rise in May and likelihood of one in June as well or in August. So, but the fact that Labor are attacking the RBA over their performance and saying they should be punishing Australians, but not talking about government spending, which has to be part of the conversation, it just has to be, I think is a really interesting insight.
Yeah, there's not much good news around, and even though employment figures came out this week that showed static situation, but then just about every economist in the country has ever done, that won't last.
No.
As we get nearer to stagflation or wherever it might be. And then, of course, the spectre of AI is over everything, and that could move at quite a pace, and that's going to have an impact on employment.
Yeah, that is. We did a poll on this for the Fin Review recently, and when it comes to we've been tracking it over 6 months, perceptions and attitudes around job growth and job stability and job security are way, way down, and their general trust in AI as a tool is also declining over the last 6 months. But basically, the only thing they can see that's positive is medical diagnosis. Everything else they think is going to be worse for them personally. And, you know, just looking the other day, Stanford University graduates, the Stanford University, graduates in computer science, at the moment only 30% are employed in the market because computer coding is being replaced by AI. And we're seeing this in groups as well, because it's not just that Gen Z, which, you know, and millennials, which can be volatile, as we discussed before, who are sort of thinking, I've got this great degree and I thought I had a great job and now I've, you know, been made redundant. WiseTech has just announced 2,000 redundancies because of AI. But it's also their parents. Their parents, you know, Gen X, typically, you know, they've quite rightly patted themselves on the back, and sort of we see it in the focus groups. They're like, I thought I did a great job, got them educated, and they got this great degree in computer science, and now they're unemployed. They're knocking on my front door, and they're like, "G'day, Dad, I'm back home. You know, I can't afford my rent."
There was a time when we kind of understood that that the new technology was coming, and we could see robots replacing people's jobs in factories. Goes a lot beyond that now. It's if you're getting degrees, science degrees out of universities, and even before you get there,
yeah,
your job's gone.
Yeah, and when you're 27, 28, you've got established your career, you've studied, and then suddenly it's like, well, you know, mate, your career is no good anymore. You've got to try and find something else. Well, that's tough.
Well, on that depressing note, I need something a little more positive. We'll end with an email from Marcus, who said that he's never written an email like this before, and he wants to express gratitude. He said, nor did he think he would want to contribute to a podcast that focuses on politics. And it came as quite a shock to him, but he thoroughly enjoys how we discuss and move away through the content. And We love that we embraced, well, we might be at different ends of the political spectrum at times, but he likes to embrace that. And as a young person, that we are unafraid to open ourselves up to different perspectives. Well, that's it for today. This podcast was made on the sovereign lands of the Wurundjeri people. It was produced by Daniel Simo. Video production by Sanjana Jose.
The executive producer is Hannah Parks.
I'm Barry Cassidy.
And I'm Tony Barry. And this is the Back to Back Barry's Guardian Australia podcast. Mm-hmm.